today we're going to be looking at chapter 4, verse 10 to 24.
That'll keep us busy.
Quite busy. Krishna explained in the first section of the fourth chapter the system for receiving transcendental knowledge, the process of parampara, and his purpose for appearing is to establish religious principles. Dharma samskara nataya sambhavami yuge yuge. When religious principles are lost, then Krishna appears to re-establish those principles. Basically, the main purpose is to elevate the entities, to elevate the conditioned souls from animal life to spiritual life, Krishna consciousness. And one who understands transcendental knowledge or spiritual knowledge becomes eligible to enter into the spiritual realm. Now, we didn't look at text 10, but that would quite often be part of that first section, but we didn't get to it on Thursday, so we'll do it today. The results, if you like, of coming to the transcendental platform or realizing the importance of we're going to look at 4:10. Read the whole purport there. Being free from attachment, fear, and anger. At the end of the third chapter, lust, greed, anger are described. The influence of motive passion. And here, Krishna is saying, if one becomes purified, jnana tapasa puttaha, many persons, bahava jnana tapasa puttaha madbhava margataha, many persons in the past, by becoming absorbed in Krishna or becoming Krishna conscious, were able to overcome the influence of the mode of passion. Because Arjuna was saying, why am I forced to act, impelled, as if by some unseen force? Even though I know I shouldn't do it, I'm forced to act. Even though I know there are going to be bad, there are going to be unfortunate consequences as a result of my activity, still I'm forced to act, and Krishna says it's because of lust, not the passion, material desires, basically. So the end result of becoming Krishna conscious is to get free from the influence of the mode of passion, basically. Prabhupada says in the purport, as described above, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. God is a person. Very hard for people to come to terms with. Generally, people who are attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in materialism that it is almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme could be a person. My mum said to me once, she said, God's not a person, is he? And in fact, when I was in Delhi, in Noida, just recently, Budimundra Prabhu was building a house for a gentleman who wanted to speak to me about spirits, wanted to meet me. And then he wanted to tell me that God is the Brahman. We don't meet people who are so... He says, nirakar, no form, no, doesn't act. God is the Brahman without any form. I said to him, how can God have something, how can we have something that God hasn't got if he's the source of us? If God is the source of everything, how come he hasn't got something that we've got? And then he said, yes, God appears in the personal form as the guru. I said, so the guru's got more than God. He said, I'd like to come back and spend a few hours with you. I said, sure. And afterwards I said to Budimundra, I said, what are you going to talk to that guy for? He said, well, he's my client, so I can't preach to him, but I got you to preach to him. You can say the things that I wanted to say to him. Very difficult for people to know God is a person. And even we might pay some sort of lip service to that concept, but we don't believe it necessarily or fully understand and appreciate. Because we just see the workings of the machine. We just see the workings of the material energy. And without seeing the person behind, it's a bit like, you know, the Martians see the Martian explorer land and they're looking at it and they're saying, what is this? It's just a machine. Without realising that there's a human being behind it, you know, moving around and watching where it goes and so forth. There's some intelligence behind it. Because that's Prabhupada's argument. Well, one of the arguments for explaining that there is a God. Material creation works in such an ordered and structured way. It is not a random, haphazard event, but rather it is, which indicates some intelligence. Such materialists cannot even imagine that there is a transcendental body which is imperishable, full of knowledge and eternally blissful. That's the other problem. You know, if we think of a person, then we think of ourselves and all of our own limitations, and we think, how can God be a person? When, you know, all of the persons that we know are so faulty. So to have an idea of the of the perfect person. Full of knowledge and eternally blissful. In the materialistic concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance and completely miserable. Therefore, people in general keep the same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Consequently, they consider the Supreme to be impersonal. It's hard to see the person behind the tree falling down on top of your car and crushing it. Huh? And because they too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. When they are informed their spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again. And so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into impersonal void. Generally, they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean which merge into the ocean. That is the highest perfection of spiritual existence attainable without individual personality. This is the merging with the Brahman. This is a kind of fearful stage of life devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all. This is most people. Spiritual life is like, what is that? Being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation, they become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. Right? Everything ultimately is destroyed. Everything collapses and crumbles into nothing. And so therefore, and in the beginning there's no existence. For a period of time there's some existence. And then at the end, there's nothing. So therefore, actually, everything is void. Makes sense, doesn't it? It's logical. Without seeing a more subtle existence. Such people are in a diseased condition of life. Some people are too materially attached, and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. Some of them want to merge into the supreme spiritual cause, and some of them disbelieve in everything, being angry at all sorts of spiritual speculation out of hopelessness. This last class of men take the shelter of some kind of intoxication, and their affective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as spiritual vision. Rastafari, for example. Our religion is to smoke ganja. A lot of people like that kind of religion. But quite popular in the 70s, actually, Bob Marley and the Rastafarians. One has to get rid of all three... And Timothy Leary, for example, take LSD and realise yourself. Self-realisation. Because it's all motive, it's all ignorance, actually. One has to get rid of all three stages of attachment to the material world. Negligence of spiritual life, fear of spiritual personal identity, and the conception of void that arises from frustration in life. To get free from these three stages of the material concept of life, one has to take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by the bona fide spiritual master, and follow the disciplines and regulated principles of devotional life. The last stage of the devotional life is called bhava, or transcendental love of Godhead. And you can see here, the last line, putam mad bhavam agataha. Mad bhavam. Love for Krishna. Then Prabhupada tells us what the process is. Ado sadagata sadhu sangauta bhajana kriya tato nata nivriti syat tato nishtara jistata. Sadakanam ayam premnaha padurabhave bhavet kramaha. These are the krama means steps. These are the stages by which one comes to the point of bhava, or love of God, through this process of devotional service. Ultimately, that's what Krishna is leading to, that one has to come to the point of bhakti. And this is the development of bhakti. In the beginning, one must have a preliminary desire for self-realization. This will bring one to the stage of trying to associate with persons who are spiritually elevated. So, in the beginning, there has to be some faith, ado shraddha. Then, as a result of that faith, one will then come into the association of other faithful people, sadhu sangha. I remember, you know, when I was in intermediate, which was third year high school, what's that, year 10, And it was just so uncool to believe in God amongst my friends. And to go to church was like, you know, you were such a out of it if you went to church. You know, why are you letting your parents push you around? And so, you know, I used to fight with my parents about going to church, and eventually they gave up. But it's interesting, even though my friends and associates had influenced me to at least publicly pronounce that God didn't exist and that, you know, religiosity was, or certainly Christianity, Christian religion was inappropriate. In my heart, I couldn't remove my belief and understanding that there was a purpose and that there was a creator. I couldn't get rid of that idea. And so I spent quite a good deal of my youth trying to find people who could answer the questions that I had. Of course, when I met the devotees, then most of the questions that I had, I found they had answers to. So I was very attracted then to the association of the devotees. In the next stage, one becomes initiated by an elevated spiritual master, because this is what happens when you associate with the devotees, then automatically they will influence you to engage in the process of bhajana kriya. Huh? Bhajana kriya. And under his instruction, the neophyte devotee begins the process of devotional service. I remember when Guru Govinda Maharaj would greet you, he would say in Bengali, and I can't remember what the Bengali was, but basically it was, the English translation was, how's your bhajan going? How's your bhajan? So we say, you know, how's it going? How's it going, mate? But this is how the Vaishnavas greet each other. How is your bhajan? How is your chanting? How is your puja? How is your study of the scriptures? How is your preaching? Because even the preaching for a devotee is bhajan. Huh? So in the association of the devotees, one engages in devotional service. By execution of devotional service under the guidance of the spiritual master, one becomes free from all material attachment. This is anatta nivritti, wherein one gives up one's bad habits. And in this verse, it's mentioned, jnana tapasa, right? By the cultivation of knowledge and by the performance of austerities, right? Jnana tapasa puttaha, being purified. It's like we're studying the Bhagavad Gita. We become purified by reading the Bhagavad Gita, by hearing the topics, by discussing them amongst ourselves, thinking about them. That clears the consciousness, clears the intelligence, clears the mind. Also performing austerities is for our purification, for the devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement. Our austerities are fairly simple. Anybody think of some of the austerities that we perform?
Rise early.
Rise early. Take a bath.
Follow a codicil.
What else? Clean your teeth. Yeah.
Chant Hare Krishna.
Chant Hare Krishna. In particular, we have four austerities that we follow.
Mercy.
Huh?
Mercy, cleanliness.
Mercy, cleanliness, truthfulness. Austerity, performing austerity. Controlling the senses. Yeah. No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. These are our main austerities. Tapasya. As a result of performing those austerities, then bad habits are automatically given up. Of course, there are bad habits on the gross level, but there are also bad habits on the subtle level. We have to purify ourselves of. So anatta nivritti is the stage in devotional service where we go through and purify those anattas, Artha means that which is desirable or that which is necessary, and anatta means that which is undesirable or superfluous to our existence. And unfortunately, we're usually hanging on to quite a few anattas, thinking that they're artha, valuable. And as Romero was explaining today and previously, all the things that we might hope to acquire ultimately will be taken away from us. Certainly in the material world anyway. All the material things. Whereas the spiritual knowledge, spiritual realization, those things can't be taken away. And then as a result of removing the unwanted things, one becomes steady, nishta, steady. One becomes free from all material attachment, attains steadiness and self-realization, and acquires a taste for hearing about the absolute personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. Ruchi. So it says there, tato nata nivritti shat, tato nishta, that steadiness, ruchistata. Then from steadiness comes a taste. So we really like the chant Hare Krishna. We relish the discussions about the topics. This taste leads one further forward to attachment for Krishna consciousness. This is Shakti, Ata Shaktis, Tato Bhavas, then comes Bhava. This taste leads one further forward to attachment for Krishna consciousness, which is matured in Bhava, or the preliminary stage of transcendental love of God. Real love for God is called Prema, the highest perfectional stage of life. In the Prema stage, there is a constant engagement in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So by the slow process of devotional service, under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, one can attain the highest stage, being free from all material attachment, from the fearfulness of one's individual spiritual personality, and from the frustrations that result in void philosophy. Then one can ultimately attain to the abode of the Supreme Lord. This is our means. This is very clearly here. This is our process for conquering that pushing of the mode of passion, the pushings of material desires. And then conquer this fear of personality, conquer this attachment for materialistic pleasures. Conquer the anger and frustration that comes from lifetime after lifetime of existence in the material world. One of the problems that happens for the devotees is that the process of devotional service is not easy, and even it can at times become a little frustrating because we're such blockheads and we're so attached that we hang on tightly to our material attachments. We follow the process of devotional service without giving up the attachment, and we think, chanting Hare Krishna, it doesn't work. And I have a friend who lives in Kasabu, I think it is. And last year, he was suffering from cancer, actually, and he then in Melbourne, he was having an operation, and I said, why don't you try chanting Hare Krishna? Achieve up. He said, tried that. Done that. Doesn't work. It might work if we. The example of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives of the wedding party. You know, the wedding party is in joyful spirit, celebrating the occasion, and they hop on the boat to travel down the Ganga to their hometown, taking the bride with the, you know, the groom's family. It's a big celebration. Having a big party, having a whale of a time. And they leave in the evening. And when the sun rises in the morning, they discover that they're still in the same place. Somebody had forgotten to untie the boat. So his point is that we can be having a great time in Krishna consciousness, but if we're still hanging on to our material attachments, then we won't make progress, even though we're rowing and rowing and rowing. So there's two sides there. There's the positive side, taking up Krishna consciousness, but there's also the negative side, that is having to detach ourselves from material things, which requires a certain amount of honesty, introspection, truthfulness, which is part of that, again, that anatta nivritti, right? So, does anybody have any comments or questions on this?
I've got a question.
Yeah.
In the process mentioned here, it says one becomes free from all material attachment before one acquires a taste about hearing.
Yes.
Krishna.
Yeah.
Like, you can't get a taste before you're
Krishna's pretty kind. A salesman sometimes gives out free samples to entice the customers. But ruchi actually comes after steadiness. So as a result of being steady for a couple of days, we do get a taste. But usually, very often, that taste is just the relief that we're getting from not engaging in all stupid activities. You know, that's the ecstasy of just being normal, coming to the human form of life. But real ruchi, you know, real taste comes after nishta. Where the chanting of Hare Krishna is so relishable that he can't stop. You know, chanting 16 rounds is not enough. Prabhupada's response to, when is your japa good enough? How do you know you're chanting good japa, Prabhupada? When chanting 16 rounds is not enough. Or another time Prabhupada said, you will know when you're chanting good rounds. Nobody will have to tell you. You'll experience it. So, text 11. Basically, everybody is looking for some form of pleasure. Ultimately, they're looking for Krishna. Everybody's looking for Krishna. They just don't know. They're just going about it in odd kind of way. Different kinds of ways. And as a result of the way that people want to relate to him, then Krishna reciprocates. As all surrender under me, I reward them accordingly. So Krishna has a relationship with everybody. Everybody follows his path. It's just that some are going forwards on the path and some are going back. Not that all paths lead to, the Mayavada interpretation of this is that when Krishna says everybody's following my path, means that everybody's going to Krishna. All paths lead to Krishna. Oh, that's bogus. You know, just so Prabhupada gives the example. If you drive on the road to Adelaide, you're not going to end up in Sydney. Right? Or, if you buy a ticket to go to Adelaide, you won't end up in Sydney. So, depending on where you're situated and which direction you happen to be going, you're still on the path, but you're reciprocating with Krishna according to the way you want to have that reciprocation. And Krishna will reward you accordingly. Everyone is searching for Krishna in the different aspects of his manifestations. This is in the purport. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is partially realized in his impersonal Brahma Jyoti effulgence, and as the all-pervading super soul dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms. But Krishna is fully realized only by his pure devotees. Consequently, Krishna is the object of everyone's realization, and thus anyone and everyone is satisfied according to one's desire to have him. If we want Krishna's material creation, then that's what we'll get. According to how much we deserve. Similarly, if we want Krishna, we'll get Krishna. But also, according to the desire, the degree of the desire that we want him. In the transcendental world also, Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees in a transcendental attitude, just as the devotee wants him. One devotee may want Krishna as supreme master, another as his personal friend, another as his son, and still another as his lover. Krishna rewards all the devotees equally according to their different intensities of love for him. In the material world, the same reciprocations of feelings are there, and they are equally exchanged by the Lord with the different types of worshippers. Ultimately, Krishna fulfills everybody's desires. For the karmis, materialistic people, what does Krishna say? There's a couple of verses. Ishvaraha parama. Ishvaraha sabhabhutanam. Vridesha arjuna tishtati. Brahmayam sabhabhutanam. Jantra rudhani mayaya. I'm situated within the heart of everybody. Ishvaraha sabhabhutanam. I'm the controller of everybody. Situated within the heart. I'm guiding the wanderings of everybody. So the karmis get their material desires fulfilled, ultimately by Krishna. The Brahmavadis, those who are interested in becoming one with the Brahman, they're also satisfied by Krishna. He allows them to merge with the Brahmajyoti. The impersonalists think that they've become God. They get repeated birth and death. Even the Brahmavadis, to one degree or another, may come back into the cycle of repeated birth and death, unless they get elevated into Goloka. Yogis get mystic cities. Right? They get the ability to control people's minds, to walk on water, to get things from a distant place. They get mystic cities. They're able to do, act as if they're God, basically. So they become godlike. They become powerful. Yogis can become, they can expand themselves. That's also provided by Krishna. But ultimately, the topmost level of achievement is to go back to Goloka Vrindavan. Because each one of these achievements is limited and temporary. So, depending on the different desires of the living entity, then they get different results. So that's what Krishna means when he says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Yes, sir.
To light the mind, to the mind body, desire.
They don't desire, but that's what they get. Yeah. Well, they also get the what they may be. They may be. Well, mind body means basically they consider the form of God to be material. Right? A manifestation of the Brahman in the mode of goodness described. So some, because their understanding is that God actually has no form. They think of the form of God as being a lesser feature. The impersonal feature for them is higher.
Impersonalists are Mayavadis or Brahmavadis?
Brahmavadis are also impersonalists. Well, not so much that they're impersonalists, they aspire to and attain the Brahma Jyoti. Right? It's slightly different in that they have a desire to be one with God and experience that beingness. Just resonate with the one. And it's peaceful. It's attractive because there's no material disturbance. You're not in a material world. You're in, practically speaking, in the spiritual world. But, you see, the thing is, it's a limited realization of the Brahman. Because the Brahman feature has other aspects. Vedanti tat tat bhavidas. Vedanti tat. How does that verse go? Yads. No. I know the last part was Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Sapyate. There's a bit that goes in the middle. Jnanam Yajnanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Sapyate. That the learned persons describe the Absolute as being made up of three features, right? There's the Brahman feature, there's the Paramatma feature, and there's the Bhagavan feature. So the Brahman feature is the realization of that Sat feature of the Lord, the eternality aspect. That there's an energy that pervades everything, right? And to become one with that energy is to realize the Brahman feature, Brahman aspect. It's the focus on the impersonal, but it doesn't mean necessarily that they don't have or can't have or won't have an appreciation for the Supreme Person, that aspect. Whereas the Mayavadis see the Supreme Person as being material, and so they negate him. And you see, the example, anybody know who's an example of a Brahmavadi who eventually came to Krishna consciousness? A very prominent one. Sukadeva Goswami, yes. You know, he was a Brahmavadi, inside, outside, doesn't matter. It's all the same, basically. And his father said, you know, you've been in the womb for 16 years, come out. God, for me, it doesn't matter whether I'm inside or outside, it doesn't matter, I'm satisfied. So then how did he attract, what was his methodology for getting Sukadev to be born? He recited the Srimad Bhagavatam to him. And then he was automatically, he wasn't a Mayavadi who thought that God, oh, this is just a material description of material activities. He was attracted then to the personal characteristics, attributes and pastimes of the Lord. So he wasn't a Mayavadi, he was a Brahmavadi, but he was a devotee. And so when he heard the pastimes of Krishna, then he was, of course, then he became a transcendentalist. And it's interesting, as a transcendentalist, we'll get on this in this next section. As a transcendentalist, then what did he do? He said, I'm leaving home. And Vyasadeva was like, oh no, my son is leaving home. I haven't given him his Brahman initiation, haven't got him married, haven't done all the things that I'm supposed to do. I failed as a father. But actually he hadn't, because Sukadeva Goswami realized the purport of the Bhagavatam, basically, heard the Srimad Bhagavatam, and so then he was just off relishing the pastimes of the Lord. So it didn't matter, you know, whether he'd done this ritual or that ritual or done that sacrifice or studied the Vedas or whatever, he already had reached the pinnacle of achievement, which we will get on to. I'm not sure where I got up to, but anyway, this will... The pure devotees, both here and in the transcendental abode, associate with him in person and are able to render personal service to the Lord and thus derive transcendental bliss in his loving service. As for those who are impersonalists and who want to commit spiritual suicide by annihilating the individual existence of the living entity, Krishna helps also by absorbing them into his effulgence. Such impersonalists do not agree to accept the eternal, blissful personality of Godhead. Consequently, they cannot relish the bliss of transcendental personal service to the Lord, having extinguished their individuality. Some of them, who are not firmly situated even in the impersonal existence, return to the material field to exhibit their dormant desires for activities. That's the Mayavadi. They are not admitted into the spiritual planets, but they are again given a chance to act on the material planets. For those who are fruitive workers, the Lord awards the desired results of their prescribed duties as the Jagyeshwara, and those who are yogis seeking mystic powers are awarded such powers. In other words, everyone is dependent for success upon his mercy alone, and all kinds of spiritual processes are but different degrees of success on the same path. Unless, therefore, one comes to the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, all attempts remain imperfect, as is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.10. Akama savakama va moksha kama udagati tibrena bhakti jogena yajeta purusham param. So just in case you're wondering what you should do, here it is. Whether one is without desire, akama, without desire. And that's the devotees. Savakama, or has all desires. Or moksha kama, has desire for liberation. One should with all efforts try to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for complete perfection culminating in Krishna consciousness. Okay. Right. Now. A little sideline. There are those who worship the demigods. What do they get? Men in this world desire success in fruitive activities and therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly, of course, men get results from fruitive work in this world. The problem with worshipping the demigods is that the results are all temporary and limited, and so therefore they're not really desirable for a devotee. Let's move on. According to the three modes of material nature, and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. And although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. So Krishna creates a system to elevate people from the animal status to the human beings. According to the modes of material nature, the way you work, and the qualities that you have, that's how you should be engaged, naturally engaged. It's a system created by Krishna. So that each one of us, according to our different propensities, can act. We have to follow certain rules and regulations. That's the responsibility of the human form of life. Prabhupada gives the example, nice example. You know, the road rules are not meant for the animals. Right? An animal can be walking down the street and he sees a stop sign. If he walks through the stop sign, he's not going to be punished. But if a human being walks and disobeys the rules, then he is liable to be punished. Because in the human form of life, there's a greater responsibility given. Greater responsibility is given to elevate oneself. So therefore, this Varnashram system. Krishna himself is above the Varnashram system. He doesn't have to follow it. Huh? Although it's interesting, later on, what does Krishna say? I do follow it. In order to set an example. And he probably said it, I think, in the third chapter. Right? Yadyada charati sreshtas tattivitaro janaha sayat pramanam kurute lokas tatamabhartite. Is that in the third chapter? We did that already? Yeah? You sure?
No. We'll find out, won't we?
And for a devotee, this comes up, for a devotee who follows the Varnashram system and eventually comes to the level of transcendence, even the Varnashram system is not necessarily applicable. A Vaishnava who's a transcendentalist, actually transcendental, can disregard the rules and regulations of the Varnashram system. Prabhupada says, a person in Krishna consciousness is above even the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas are meant to be the topmost level of the Varnashram system. Although Brahmanas by quality, this is in the purport down the bottom, although Brahmanas by quality are supposed to know about Brahman, the supreme absolute truth, most of them approach only the impersonal Brahman manifestation. But a man who transcends the limited knowledge of a Brahman and reaches the knowledge of the supreme personality of Godhead becomes a person in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, a Vaishnava. Krishna consciousness includes knowledge of all different plenary expansions. And as Krishna is transcendental in the system of the four divisions of human society, a person in Krishna consciousness is also transcendental to all divisions of human society, whether we consider the divisions of community, nation, or species. Of course, that doesn't mean that a devotee can just do what he damn well likes, mind you. As Krishna says, I still follow the system. He doesn't need to follow the system. Neither does a devotee who's on a transcendental platform have to follow a system. Transcendental truth. The purpose of the system is to bring one to the spiritual realization. Next verse, text 14. There is no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for the fruits of action. One who understands the truth about me also does not become entangled in the fruit of reactions of work. As there are constitutional laws in the material world stating that the king can do no wrong, or that the king is not subject to the state law, similarly the Lord, although he is the creator of this material world, is not affected by the activities of the material world. Just like, you know, the king may come into the prison house. Just because the king has come into the prison house doesn't mean he's become a prisoner. In fact, the king will come into the prison house very often to liberate the prisoners. Okay, everybody's pardoned. Huh? Yoo-hoo! We're off. Huh? But just because the king comes in the prison house doesn't mean that he has to follow the same rules and regulations as all the prisoners. So similarly, Krishna appears in the material world, but that doesn't mean that he's bound by the laws of the material world. Similarly also, a devotee may appear in the material world, but if he's actually on the transcendental platform, he's above. Now that's a pure, you know, that's a self-realized person. We're not on the self-realized platform. We're on the side. We're beginners. We're learning how to become. So therefore, we have to follow this. We have to follow the guidelines that are given by Krishna, the rules and regulations. So in that sense, we still follow the Varnashram system to regulate our lives. Students should act in a particular way. Householders should act in a particular way, according to their occupation and according to their ashram. For the purpose of gradual advancement, gradual development of Krishna consciousness. He creates and remains aloof from the material creation, whereas the living entities are entangled in the fruitive results of material activities. because of their propensity for lording it over material resources. The proprietor of an establishment is not responsible for the right and wrong activities of the worker, but the workers are themselves responsible. So that's where we come in the sense that, you know, we're bound up. You know, sometimes people will like to say, you know, if Krishna wants me to be, you know, a devotee, then I'll be a devotee. Right? Or, you know, if I'm going to be successful, if Krishna wants, then I'll. No. You know, don't hang it on Krishna. You act because that's the way you want to behave. And so therefore, you know, we're the ones who are responsible for the results that we get, not Krishna. Krishna may provide the results, but it's along the lines of you know, man proposes and God disposes. But we're the precipitator of the action. And this next section, up to text 24, deals with action. Karma, vikarma, and akarma. Very important element of transcendental knowledge. Transcendental knowledge means knowing what is karma, that is, activities that are recommended, prescribed duties. That's what the Varnashram system is all about. Prescribed duties for gradual advancement. Vikarma means bad karma. Basically, misusing the facility that you've got and going off and doing some nonsense. And then akarma, which is what Krishna ultimately wants us to engage in, is those activities which don't have any material result but only have a transcendental or spiritual result. That's what we want. Oh. I don't use this thing often enough to know what I'm doing with it. As liberated souls in ancient times acted with the understanding of my transcendental nature, therefore you should perform your duty following in their footsteps. Well, this has got to do with the fact that Arjuna wants to take it easy and retire from fighting, right? So therefore, he's thinking, yeah, this is a bit of a hassle, I think I'll go to the forest. And Krishna is going to explain that even in doing that activity, even though it appears to be inaction, right, not doing anything, actually it's action because it's motivated by a personal desire and it's not his duty. This is one of the arguments. Yes.
Is akarma the same as nishkarma?
Karma. No, there's a difference. See, here there's an nishkarma, vikarma, and nishkam means no desire. Karma, K-A-M-A, K-A, long A, M-A. Right? So there's a difference between the two words. One means action, one means desire. So, neophytes in Krishna consciousness often want to retire from activities without having a complete understanding of. Just, you can ignore that for the moment. Arjuna is here advised to act in Krishna consciousness following the footsteps of the Lord's previous disciples. And here's the thing. Even, and this is, Arjuna is bewildered what he should or shouldn't do. And Krishna says, even the intelligent are bewildered in determining what is action and what is inaction. Arjuna is thinking, yes, I should go to the forest and not fight. That's a spiritual thing to do. Right? But one has to learn what is action and what is inaction from the right authority. So Krishna is going to explain to Arjuna now, you know, the intricacies of action and inaction. Prabhupada says in the purport to the next verse, to understand Krishna consciousness and action according to its modes, one has to learn one's relationship with the Supreme. Huh? One who has learned perfectly knows that every living entity is an eternal servitor of the Lord. That's our identity. And that consequently one has to act in Krishna consciousness. This is the real action. The entire Bhagavad Gita is directed towards this conclusion. What's the conclusion?
Surrender.
Huh?
Surrender.
Surrender? Why?
Surrender.
Huh? You have heaps of choices. But why? Why should we surrender?
Does Krishna want us to surrender?
Yes.
But why? I just read it. Why?
To get back to Krishna.
Why?
It's in our best interest.
Why is it in our best interest?
We can
do that too, yes. What does Prabhupada say here? Yeah, that's why. Because we're Krishna servants. That's who we are. When we do something else, we're ignoring who we actually are. And so that's why we get ourselves in a lot of trouble. We think, I am, you know, whatever it is we think we are. Each one of us has our own peculiarity of thought, thinking that we're something separate from Krishna. The entire Bhagavad Gita is directed toward this conclusion that we're servants of Krishna. Any other conclusions against this consciousness and its attendant actions are vikarmas or prohibited actions. How's that? Any activity that is not related to Krishna is vikarma. Is that heavy or what? Yeah.
But then what is karma though? Karma is also not related to Krishna. Vikarma is a bad thing.
No, that's right. Karma also then becomes bad. We will continue on and we'll understand that. I just want to read the next few verses. To understand all this, one has to associate with authorities in Krishna consciousness. How is it that karma is also bad karma? Now, why is worshipping the demigods and seeking elevation to the heavenly planets good? Looks good to me. You live for a long time, you reside with the demigods, get to drink plenty of samaras, have a beautiful body, you're very knowledgeable and learned, and you get to enjoy. Yoo-hoo! Let's go.
It's temporary.
Yes, it's temporary.
And there's something better.
And there's something better. Yeah. That to understand all this, one has to associate with authorities in Krishna consciousness and learn the secret from them. This is as good as learning from the Lord directly. Learning from the devotees is as good as learning from Krishna. Otherwise, even the most intelligent persons will be bewildered. Easy to be bewildered about action and inaction. That's why we need to take shelter of the devotees who are more advanced than us, who can teach us how to effectively surrender to the process, surrender to being a servant of Krishna. A person acting in, this is in the purport, a person acting in Krishna consciousness is naturally free from the bonds of karma. So Krishna says, one who sees inaction in action. Here's Arjuna out fighting on the battlefield. Oh, he's killing his guru. Sinful. Boo. He's killing his uncle. Oh, terrible. He's fighting with his cousins. Ah, what a sinful wretch. No. Not sinful. He's doing it on behalf of Krishna. On Krishna's behest. So, Prabhupada says here, a person acting in Krishna consciousness is naturally free from the bonds of karma. And we have to be careful because, you know, you can't say, okay, I'm a devotee and therefore whatever I do, I'm doing it, you know, like the Blues Brothers, you know, they say, we're on a mission from God. So therefore they can do whatever they like. Right? We're on a mission from God. Oh, okay, do what you like. No. One still has to follow Krishna's instructions. His activities are all performed for Krishna. Therefore, he does not enjoy or suffer any of the effects of work. Consequently, he is intelligent in human society, even though he is engaged in all sorts of activities for Krishna. Upkarma means without reaction to work. So there's an explanation here. We've got karma. These are activities. Basically, this means good karma. Right? Actions performed in terms of one's prescribed duties, as revealed in the scriptures, like the Dhanashram system. Worship of the demigods, etc. Following the... doing what your teacher tells you to do. Huh? Do what your teacher tells you to do. That's good karma.
The output of karma and our karma is the same.
Huh?
The output of our karma and our
karma. No. This elevates one, at least in the material realm. This type of activity, vikarma, means, you know, not following any of the scriptural injunctions. Just do what you like, basically. This one is rock on. Do what you like. Rock on, man. But what does it mean? Misusing one's freedom that directs one, that direct one to lower life forms. Become a pig. Or a dog. Or worse, germ. And then have to go through 8,400,000, well, at least 8 million species just to get back up with the human species again. Whoa. As hippies, we thought we were cool and we were making spiritual advancement, but actually all we were doing was this big karma. Going down. This one should actually be at the top. Our karma should actually be up at the top. We've got this in the wrong order. Our karma should be up here. Actions that free one from birth and death. Because karma still binds us to the results of our fruitive activities, which means, again, birth and death in the material world. Although it may mean elevated in the heavenly planets and then coming into the human species and so forth. This is more in the mode of goodness. And the mode of passion also keeps one in the human species. Mode of ignorance, where you ignore scriptural injunctions, means down. Upkarma means spiritual activities, devotional service. That means no reaction, no good reaction, no bad reaction. Transcendental. Yes.
But that same question,
guru
nishkama karma yoga.
Nishkama. Well, that comes in here. So long as you're performing your duty. That's why it's recommended you perform your duty without desire. That's coming up. It's hang on. You're jumping ahead of us. And so that's why, you know, Krishna is saying to Arjuna, no, don't go to the forest and just make out like you're a yogi. Because you're doing that still with a desire. Material desire, back to this point. Whereas a devotee acts without personal desire, but with a desire to please Krishna, preferably. A Krishna conscious person has no desire for sense gratification. That's the idea. We try to remove our desires for sense gratification. Or at least if we have those desires, then we sublimate them in Krishna consciousness. That's where the Varnashram system comes into play for the devotees. Where we're not so elevated that we don't have any personal desire, so therefore we have an ashram for that. And Krishna mentions, as I think Urmila mentioned in class this morning, you know, Krishna says, sex life, according to religious principles, I am that activity. So we have guidelines so that every activity or every inclination, other than, you know, just giving it up completely, but we have facility whereby we can utilize our inclinations in Krishna's service. That's why Krishna says, the Bhagavatam says, akama kamasabhava, whether you have no desire, whether you're full of desire, or whether you want liberation, and engage in devotional service, then all of these desires will be satisfied. And that's again supported by Krishna's statement, yayatamam prapadyante tamstatayva bhajamyaham. As they surrender unto me, I will reward them accordingly. Right. So Krishna will fulfill all of our desires, but in ways that we have to discover. In fact, many of our desires Krishna won't fulfill because they're not good for us. And as I mentioned in class the other day, Krishna sees the overarching desire of the devotee to be Krishna conscious, and so he ignores some of the resonance, if you like, of past desires, the resonance of one's past that manifests in the form of, you know, inclinations to do things which are not good for us. So Krishna doesn't give that facility for the devotees. And as a result of, and see, here's the thing, as a result of performing the austerities, and as a result of engaging in the positive practices of devotional service, then what happens? Anybody got any idea what happens?
You're lucky.
If you're lucky, you might feel miserable because you didn't get your material desires fulfilled.
Purify our desires.
Yes, you get purified. You become purified. You cultivate the knowledge, you engage in devotional service, you become happy, and then as a result of that, you become satisfied. Engaging in devotional service, you get more than you bargained for. Way more. That's my experience. Engaging in devotional service, you wanted this thing and that thing, little paltry things, and then Krishna gives you so much more. Very powerful. Yes, sir.
With Vikrama,
yes.
How do you know if someone's just going to go to a lower life form or to
look at their behaviour. If you can see the seeds of doggish or piggish mentality in their behaviour, like eating meat. Drinking alcohol.
He's saying, how do you know if they're going to go just to animal species, boy or hell's plant?
How do you know? Well, we don't know exactly, but there's a good chance I'll get both. Because the way it works is that if you're in a human form of life, you need to be conditioned so that your mentality sees being a dog as a positive thing. Right? So what happens is the living entity gets transported off to a particular loka in the hellish planets where they get, it's happening on a subtle platform, where they get punished and punished and punished, so that when the opportunity comes to be born as a pig, they're thinking, wow, this is great. I get to eat as much stool as I like. Huh? So, you know, you have to be really... The Yamadutas have a lot of fun. We're going to fix you up, mate. You want to behave like a pig? Okay, come with us. So, good chance they're going to get both. A bit of time spent in the hellish planet suffering, And then given the opportunity to become a pig, you think it's a good deal.
What kind of body do you have in the nose plant?
Subtle body. That's where all the suffering takes place. May even be a gross body. But no. See, it's at least from my understanding of the sixth canon of the Bhagavad Gita, it's described how the Yama, is it sixth canon? Fifth canon, fifth canon. The Yamadutas take the living entity out of the material body in a subtle form. That's the description. So it's not a gross body. It's a subtle body. This is what people, you know, people don't like Christianity because you've got to go to hell. I don't like Christianity, I don't like this hell stuff. Don't like being punished. And that's how, at least from my understanding, from my reading of the Bhagavad Gita, that's how it works.
You were saying how animals get, humans get animal body by their consciousness, but how does an animal get a human body?
They gradually, you know, there's a gradation of species, and you basically just move up through the species. As you wear off your karma.
So it's not by the mercy of the devotee.
Well, you may be unfortunate, you know, you could be a fish in a fish pond in the Hare Krishna temple. Somebody, you know, they couldn't eat that last puri that they put on their plate there. Teaching him the fish pond. Well, you could be one of the spoggies, you know, that. Although we think that some of the spoggies are actually devotees to their last life, you know, they're coming back. They seem to know their way into the prasadam hall. They'll fly in the window and then they'll go out down the stairs. Or they'll fly up the stairs and go out the window. They got it worked out and they know exactly, you know, 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
You watch.
Actually, no, that activities which we are doing are actually pleasing to Krishna.
How do we know?
Yeah.
Well, first, but you'll be happy for a start. And you can confirm that by taking the association of the devotees.
So by following the previous acharyas in the footsteps?
Following the previous acharyas, that means also, usually it means having a spiritual master, but in ISKCON, basically having a spiritual master means the devotees, the spiritual master will say, okay, your service is to work in this temple with these devotees that work cooperatively together. That's how Prabhupada set it up. And there may be some specifics in those instructions, like, you know, do this particular type of service or engage in this type of activity. But usually what will be pleasing to Krishna is fairly simple things. Working cooperatively with the devotees, especially preaching, maintaining temples, maintaining temple communities, worshipping the deity, engaging in the 9 processes of devotional service, hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna, serving Krishna, worshipping the deity, offering prayers, becoming Krishna's friend. All these activities are pleasing to Krishna. And as a result of that, you become happy.
Try to engage as much as we can in Krishna's service.
Yeah. Yep. All of those things, that's what it is. Satatam kirtayam tamam yatantascha dridhavrata. Krishna says that my devotees are always engaged in chanting my glories. Satatam means always. And yatantascha dridhavrata means they do it with a firm vow. But yes, it means pretty solid engagement. Yes.
If you're engaged in devotional service, but you're contaminated with material desires,
yep.
Then the intention might be devotional service, but because you're contaminated, does that mean that it's like a karma and karma mixed? Or
no, devotional service is transcendental to karma and vikarma. There's the Prabhupada gives the story of the thief who went on a pilgrimage with the devotees, and one night he woke up in the middle of the night and he was just overcome with the urge to steal something. So he got up and rifled everybody's coats and jackets and bags, and he took all their possessions, their valuables. But then he thought, this is such bad karma. I can't do it. So then he tried to put everything back, but he couldn't remember where everything went. So he just went back to bed, and then everybody woke up in the morning and said, "Where's my wallet gone?" And there was a big commotion because everything had been, some things were in the right place, but other things were all turmoil. And then the thief said, "I have a confession to make. I'm a thief by trade. And I was overcome with this strong urge to steal everybody's possessions due to my previous bad karma. But I decided, but fortunately by your good association and the fact that we're on a pilgrimage, I realised this was such a bad thing to do. I tried to put everything back, but I couldn't. I beg your forgiveness." And the lady said, "That's okay, Prabhu, just don't do it again." So, Prabhupada gives the example, Apichet, ninth chapter, Apichet Sudaracharo Bhajate Namananyabha Sadureva Samastadya Samyaki Vyasutta Hos That even if a devotee engages in the most abominable activities, because he's on the path of perfection, he's considered a devotee. But bhajate mam ananyabha. Why? Because he engages in devotional service without deviation. So he's consistently or constantly trying to serve Krishna. Occasionally there may be a hiccup. Just like with a baby, when a mother's feeding the baby and she puts her on her shoulder and burps it, and then all of a sudden the baby goes and it just vomited on your back. The mother doesn't, the mother doesn't get upset by that. That's understood that that's what happens. Of course, when you're 18 years old and you do that sort of thing, you should behave yourself. But even if the devotee, has some difficulty, we should still try to see them as saintly. This is important for us living in my experience. It's important for us living in Krishna conscious communities that we recognize our own frailties and try to better ourselves. And in seeing the frailties in others, we learn to tolerate it. Because they're still devotees. If they're not good sadhikas, then maybe we avoid their association. But if a devotee is a good sadhaka and their mood, their intention is to surrender to Krishna, then even if they have some difficulty or there's some discrepancy, that we're not certainly blind to those activities, but we make allowances for it. Krishna is gunagrahi, he sees the good. Adosha darshi, he doesn't see the bad. It's a subtle thing, we have to be very careful about it, because we don't just let people do nonsense at the same time. So it's a little fine line, we have to be firm, but at the same time gentle. Here, one is understood to be in full knowledge whose every endeavour is devoid of desire for sense gratification. So this is the key. He wants to serve Krishna. He's not motivated by personal desire. Sometimes even we're engaging in Krishna consciousness, but it's actually motivated by personal desire. That's not good. This is anattas. Remove the anattas, the unwanted things. When the activity is performed without desire for sense gratification, but is done out of a sense of duty, I'm Krishna's servant, my duty is to serve him, then he is said by sages to be a worker for whom the reactions of worship have been burned up by the fire of perfect knowledge. Prabhupada says, only a person in full knowledge can understand the activities of a person in Krishna consciousness. This is the other thing. Only a person in full knowledge can understand the activities of a devotee, because here's Arjuna killing his relatives. From the ordinary perspective, it's like, what are you doing? Which was Arjuna's protest. And Arjuna's protest, from all accounts, from different, you know, angles, looks pretty valid. Huh? Looks valid. Because a person in Krishna consciousness is devoid of all kinds of sense gratificated propensities, but Krishna, Arjuna didn't want to fight. Why? Because it was inconvenient for him. He wouldn't be happy. There's different reasons. And basically they were personal motivations. It is to be understood that he has burned up the reactions of his work by perfect knowledge of his conscious position as the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he acts not for himself, but he acts for Krishna. When we act for Krishna, then automatically we're acting for our own benefit. He has actually learned and he was attained to such perfection of knowledge. Development of this knowledge of eternal servitorship to the Lord is compared to fire. Such a fire, once kindled, can burn up all kinds of reactions to work. This is the meaning of fired up. Huh? Fired up. He's burning up the reactions. As a result, he leaves the result up to Krishna. It's the next verse. Leaves the result up to Krishna. Doesn't have to precipitate an action. Does his duty under the guidance of the spiritual master, and then the react. Whatever comes is Krishna's mercy. And basically, he's not perturbed about the result because he knows that he's not independent from Krishna. This is quite amazing. Such a man of understanding acts with mind and intelligence perfectly controlled, gives up all sense of proprietorship over his possessions, and acts only for the bare necessities of life. Thus working, he is not affected by simple reactions. Of course, as householders, we have to modify this slightly. Because, you know, if somebody comes along and tries to steal your motor car, you sort of like, oh, it's okay, it's Krishna's, it's all, everything belongs to Krishna, you can steal my car. Right? It's also mentioned in the Isopanishad, Isabhasyami Damsavan, Yat Kincha Jagatam Jagat. That everything animate and inanimate is controlled by Krishna, but he gives us a quota. It belongs to him, and we know that, but it's under our care. It's under our supervision. And so therefore we are careful about the things that Krishna has given us. You know, like our motor cars, for example. Although you would wonder sometimes. Or our ashram, right, should be kept neat and clean and tidy. Why? Because it's Krishna's. Not that it's a bit of rubbish in the ashram. Whether it's the brahmachari ashram or the grihastha ashram, it's Krishna's house. So therefore it should be dealt with respectfully. Krishna's property should be dealt with respectfully, without a sense of proprietorship. When we act with this mood of understanding that everything belongs to Krishna and that we do our duty according to Krishna's desire, then what happens is we get purified from the reactions of our past work. We're on this level of akama. This is so important for the devotees to get onto this level of akama. Now I think about it, not a bad thing to concentrate on for the rest of this week. Huh? For the rest of our lives. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Because when we're on that level of detached proprietorship, right, it's not ours, but we know it's Krishna, and so therefore we look after it properly. And we utilize these things with a sense of, okay, there may be a sense of proprietorship's got my name on it, but that's why, because Krishna has given that facility for me to use in his service. And when we act like that, then we get free from the reactions. There aren't reactions for the devotees who behave like that. And so as a result, what is his mentality? Very important. Satisfied with gain, free from duality and does not envy. This is sometimes happens with devotees. They get envious.
Oh, how come he's doing it?
I'm not. You know, when Malati and Shyam Sundar became Prabhupada's secretary and servant in the very early days of Krishna consciousness, only a short period of time after they had become devotees, and devotees Chris Prabhupada, how come they can do this, you know, serve you straight away? They're only new devotees, and Prabhupada said they're taking up Krishna consciousness from a previous life.
But then how do we know that a person fits for the Krishna's property?
How do we know that?
That person is suitable for Krishna's property. That he will
fit?
Utilize Krishna's property
how
for
do we know?
Krishna's pleasure.
How do we know? How do we know? Say the question again.
How do we know that a person is fit for Krishna's property and he will certainly utilize Krishna's property as Krishna wants for his pleasure?
How do we know?
When he's using, I think, I don't know if I understand the question properly. When he's using things in Krishna's service?
Yes. Yeah. When he's using things in Krishna's service.
When you can learn things from
him. When you can learn things from
him. How do we know that whether the person is utilizing the property of Krishna for the satisfaction of Krishna and in the right way?
How do we know?
He probably add to it rather than take away from it in the form of service or
in devotional, in the form of devotional service, so in any other way. Yes. Maybe by self, introspection once and understanding, whether he's doing for himself or for the God. You're, that's individually looking at yourself. I'm asking the same question at an individual level. Can one understand whether he's really? The question might be not so clear, but it could be either individually for yourself or collectively in others. How do I know that you're engaging in devotional service properly? How do I know that?
Observing their sincerity.
Huh?
Observing their sincerity.
Sincerity. How do you tell when somebody's sincere?
Probably
you can't. Probably
you go before the deities. Oh, so sincere. Huh? How do you tell when somebody's sincere or not?
Somebody cannot fake for that long, you know,
but
like their steadiness.
Steadiness, yes. Steadiness. Steadiness in what?
Service.
Sadhana, service.
Enthusiasm.
They remain enthusiastic.
Devotional service.
Yeah, in devotional service. Sincerity is measured. It can be measured by commitment.
When one gives up the proprietorship over the possessions, then you can see.
Yes, but that doesn't mean necessarily that he does give up the proprietorship. He might guard them jealously, just like, you know, you wouldn't just leave your safe open.
So he is not...
I'm detached.
Who does the actions?
The mood in which they perform service. Basically, basically, a devotee who's, they'll be endeavouring to chant Hare Krishna steadily. They'll be endeavouring to serve the spiritual master and Prabhupada's mission, certainly. Determinedly. They'll be trying to preach. They'll be taking on responsibility for things. You know, it's interesting, we're having a discussion in the strategic planning team about the culture of ISKCON, because out of the culture we can determine what kind of society we've got. Rajbihari asked one of his colleagues in one of his academic colleagues, you know, how would you determine what the culture of Krishna consciousness was? And he said, the gentleman said, yeah, well, I would determine by watching their behaviour and seeing what they did if they walked past a piece of paper just lying on the ground in the courtyard.
Wrong indicator. Wrong indicator.
What do you mean, wrong indication? A devotee, and Prabhupada was like this, Prabhupada saw a tap dripping. And he said, why is that tap dripping? fix it up. He called the temple commander. Why haven't you fixed up that tap? This is in the measure of culture.
The inside the organization, the person outside the organization,
and
the community.
Outside? No, inside.
Inside.
So, you know, when we, it can be a little disconcerting here because, you know, say at the Sunday feast, you can walk past a bin that's like, flakes coming out of it. But really, you know, what are you going to do? You've got to clean it out and fix it up because it's something to service. But, so, you know, this is the, how do you tell the mood of a devotee? Well, he'll be concerned about the big things, but he'll also be concerned about the little things in service. Prabhupada was concerned about those things. Oh, you know, Vishal would praise Prabhupada. Dagmar Maharaj mentioned this the other day in class. And whenever Prabhupada would come out this morning, and he would just say, Jai Prabhupada, you know, savior of the whole world, blah, 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 glorify Prabhupada, which is good. And then one time Prabhupada came out and he said, you know, what are you doing practically? What's your service? You know, don't you have something, you know, practical to do? Because the guru just doesn't want, you know, people who offer flowers and jump up and down. He wants people who are actually going to go out and do something to serve the mission of the guru. I haven't finished yet, we're getting late. Nearly finished. And I've got some questions I want to ask you. In fact, that purport's pretty amazing. Here. A Krishna conscious, listen to this. A Krishna conscious person does not make much endeavor even to maintain his body. Huh? How do you relate to that as a mum?
We don't worry about that.
You don't worry about your boy's health?
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Don't worry about myself much.
Don't worry about yourself much. But you will keep, you will worry about yourself if it comes to being healthy enough to look after your family.
Of course, I mean, whatever is required, but not too much.
Yeah, whatever is required. Practical. He is satisfied with gains which are obtained of their own accord. He neither begs nor borrows, but he labours honestly as far as is in his power, and is satisfied with whatever is obtained by his own honest labour. This pretty much relates to a householder. This is a good instruction for a householder. He is therefore independent in his livelihood. Oh, this sentence is a beauty, I reckon. It's one of the best sentences in the Bhagavad Gita. Because you have to think about it, what it actually means. He does not allow anyone's service to hamper his own service in Krishna consciousness. What does that mean?
He's fixed
in his own service. Prabhu, we want you to come and do the puja because somebody's not available today. No, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I've got my service to do. Is that what it means? Anyway, think about it. Or it may be that he's not interested in serving anybody else but Krishna. Right? Right, let's move on. The work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. So, when a devotee acts on this level of akama, then his activities are actually transcendental. What Prabhupada calls samadhi. You know, the devotees engaged in working for Krishna are non-different to Krishna. It's actually, service to Krishna is non-different from Krishna. And Prabhupada praised the devotees who were engaged in devotional service. you know, when the devotee who was, I can't remember who it was now, Ravati Nandan, I think, he was building the temple in Vrindavan, and he said to Prabhupada, you know, I am so un-Krishna conscious, all I can think of is bags of cement and lengths of wire and the fact that the coolies are ripping me off. And in Prabhupada grabbing his face, he said, you know, he said, do you think that Arjuna was just, you know, meditating on Krishna while he's on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? You know, he was worried about the fact that somebody was going to shoot his head off. But because it was in Krishna's service, and of course he had the good fortune of being able to see Krishna standing right in front of him, so he was obviously Krishna conscious. But the point being, as it says here, the work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature, no material desires, just doing it for Krishna's pleasure, situated in transcendental knowledge, he knows, I'm doing this for Krishna, I'm not the body, I'm a spirit soul, I'm doing this for Krishna, then his activities become entirely transcendental, they're not at all material. Prabhupada says in the next purport, how activities in Krishna consciousness can lead one ultimately to the spiritual goal is described here. So this is very important for the devotees to understand this point. There are various activities in Krishna consciousness, and all of them will be described in the following verses, so there's more to come. But for the present, just the principle of Krishna consciousness is described. The principle of Krishna consciousness for us is to be engaged in Krishna's service with a pure heart, free from motivation. A conditioned soul, entangled in material contamination, is sure to act in the material atmosphere, and yet he has to get out of such an environment. The process by which the conditioned soul can get out of the material atmosphere is Krishna consciousness. For example, a patient who is suffering from a disorder of the bowels due to overindulgence in milk products is cured by another milk product, namely curds. The materially absorbed conditioned soul can be cured by Krishna consciousness as set forth here in the Gita. The process is generally known as jagya, or activities, sacrifices, simply meant for the satisfaction of Vishnu. So the activities might appear to be the same. We're going to the bank and putting money in the bank. We're going to the market to buy vegetables. We're cooking. We're making breakfast because we're offering it all to Krishna. That's the difference. The difference between the devotees and the non-devotees is they're doing the same activities, but one is acting in knowledge, knowing that he's doing it in Krishna's service, and the other is thinking, I'm the doer. Kata ham iti manyate. I'm the doer. When actually it's the material energy that's acting. The spirit soul is just the observer. Krishna's facilitating through the material energy. The more the activities of the material world are performed in Krishna consciousness or for Vishnu only, the more the atmosphere becomes spiritualized by complete absorption. And that's akarma. Oh, akarma down here. Should be at the top. The word Brahma or Brahman, and that's in this verse, if you look at it, Brahmapanam Brahma Havir Brahmagno Brahmana Hutam Brahmaiva Tena Gantavyam Brahma Kamada Brahma Kama Samadina. So everything is utilized in the service of Brahman. Everything has a relationship with Brahman. The Lord is spiritual, and the rays of his transcendental body are called Brahma Jyoti, his spiritual effulgence. Everything that exists is situated in that Brahma Jyoti. But when the jyoti is covered by illusion, maya, or sense gratification, it is called material. The material veil can be removed by Krishna consciousness. In other words, we take the material energy, we use it in Krishna's service, then the covering of the material energy can be lifted because of that spiritual engagement. Very powerful. That's why Prabhupada said we should make sure everybody is fully engaged 24 hours a day. Thus the offering for the sake of Krishna consciousness, the offering, the consuming agent of such an offering or contribution, somebody who consumes it. Right? What's that? We make the offering to Krishna, we then bring out prasadam, then we give it to somebody, the person who's consuming it is also purified. The process of consumption, just eating the prasadam, is spiritual. It's actually a good example, because that's, you know, engaging the tongue is actually such a materialistic activity. Tongue is so uncontrolled in material affairs, but when it's engaged in Krishna's service through taking prasadam, it's pure transcendental, unless we eat too much. The contributor and the result are all combined together, Brahman, or the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth, covered by Maya, is called matter. Matter dovetail for the cause of the Absolute Truth regains its spiritual quality. Krishna consciousness is the process of converting the illusory consciousness into Brahman, or the Supreme. When the mind is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, it is said to be in samadhi or trance. Anything done in such transcendental consciousness is called yajna, or sacrifice for the Absolute. In that condition of spiritual consciousness, the contributor, the contribution, the consumption, the performer or leader of the performance, and the result or ultimate gain, everything becomes one in the Absolute, the Supreme Brahman. That is the method of Krishna consciousness. Any comments or questions?
After suffering in the hellish planets, when a person is put back into this material world, he's not having any idea about the past.
He's
totally in an atmosphere which is totally kind.
He's not immediately conscious of the past, no.
He's bound to act in bigger one.
Yeah.
How can we say that he is less intelligent when compared with us, like we study scriptures? That's the person who is away from his con.
Yeah.
It says that they are less intelligent people, they cannot take up, or they don't understand what's happening.
Don't understand. Yeah. How can we say that?
How can we say, how is it fair to say it?
How is it fair to say? Mm-hmm.
Because he doesn't know anything about the past. And it's also very difficult for us.
Yes, but we know that.
Because if it's fire and we touch fire,
you
we
currently
have the knowledge that
you
we are not going to touch it anymore.
That's right.
But for him, that knowledge has been taken away.
Yeah.
Whereas we still have the continued knowledge.
Yes, because he wants to forget. That's his desire. He wants that. If he wanted to understand things, then he would associate with the devotees and try to cultivate the knowledge, a proper understanding of things. But he doesn't want that. He wants to remain in ignorance. That's his desire. So he has to stay in that ignorant position. That's his desire.
So more or less everyone in this world
is ignorant. Yes. Problem is, when we walk around, we think, gee, he looks pretty cool. Can't be that ignorant, driving around in a Mercedes. He's just like a polished pig, a polished dog. I have some questions to ask, perhaps not mine. Out of the following, what would we classify as, how would we classify these in terms of karma, vikarma, and akarma? Right? Following the orders of our friends. Where does that fall? Following the orders of our friends.
Vikarma.
Depends on what kind of friends you've got.
Yes.
Could be all of the above.
Maybe karma or vikarma. Maybe karma or vikarma.
It could be akarma. If you've got devotees and they're telling you to surrender to Krishna, then that's akarma. If you've got your friends who are saying, you know, come on down to the pub, let's have a drink. That's vikarma. What would be an example of karma, following the order of your friends? What kind of an order would they give you if it was good karma?
Like Since Sandhya has to study in the university.
So yeah, go and study. Make sure you pass your exams.
Get a job.
Get a job. But that could also be akama in one sense if you're a devotee, because having a job for a devotee is not a bad thing.
It could be vikama
because he's gone to work in the butcher shop. Okay, here's another one. Following the order of the guru. Let's assume that he has a guru who's a devotee. Akama, yeah. What about following your parents' instructions? What? Yeah. Your parents are devotees, it could be akama, but even if your parents are devotees, they still could be karma. Get a job, you know, go to university, work hard, get a big job. Okay, how about this one? Following the instructions of the astrologer.
Karma.
Basically, because you know what the guru, what the astrologer. A lot of people make astrologers their gurus, and they go, "Oh, what's going to happen to me?" And then they look at the stars, and the stars basically reflect your karma. And so then the astrologer says, "Oh, yeah, you're going to have a really tough couple of months." Oh no, kaboom! We're going to have a really tough couple of months. What's that? Karma? Vikarma?
No,
could be Vikarma too, because that could be your karma. That's your karma. You're a Vikarmi, and so now all of you got these Vikarmi reactions.
Tirupati.
That's, you have a very elevated astrologer. Well, see, that's the thing. If the astrologer says, look, you have a tough time, but if you stick to the order of your guru, stick to your devotional service, you'll be able to weather it. Really, that's the thing. Because, you know, if we were being pushed by, you know, every whim and fancy that came along, we'd be doing all sorts of stuff. Huh? But if we stick to the order of the spiritual master, even though we might be inclined to do this, or be inclined to do that, or, you know, we may get all sorts of reactions. One can tolerate that, just like Prabhupada tolerated, you know, having 2 or 3 heart attacks on the Jala Dutta. You know, if you went to the astrologer would have said, look, you're going to have a really tough month this month. I don't think you should travel. Right? Looks here, your health is going to be really bad. Right? Anything about it? Prabhupada said, oh, gee, I don't think I better travel this month. Bad for health. The other one that I wrote down here was following the order of temple authorities, but I probably shouldn't ask you that one. Hopefully, if the temple authorities are following the order of their guru, then it should be also akama. Huh? All right. Okay. I promise within the next half an hour I'll put up the homework. I didn't do it for this lesson, but I will for the next couple of classes. I'll stick it up today. Any comments or questions? Jai Prabhupada.